Hello, you've reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz.
And I am Matt.
And this week we're talking...
Indy Pittsburgh, Jacoby Brissett goes down, and Mason Rudolph, he ain't it.
Hey, guess what? Neither is Mitch Trubisky.
The Kansas City backfield is back on our radar.
In Buffalo and Washington, there's one old running back, one young running back, and then Adrian Peterson.
Hey, Seattle, Tampa Bay, Tyler Lockett rocks, and DK Metcalf breaks out. Oh, and by the way, they also added Josh Gordon.
Don't look now, but the Raiders are doing things.
And some quick hits on the rest of the games.
Leave a message. We'll be back.
Maybe.
Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. I'm here with Matt Harmon. Brett Rader is also here saying very good about the Broncos quarterback of the future, Brandon Allen.
We're set. We're set until the 2030s at least at quarterback. So we'll just go fill out the rest of that team, offensive line and, linebackers. But we're good here in Denver.
No thumbs up for Drew Lock?
We'll test him out later in the year, but maybe we'll trade him to Miami or so after they've given up on Tua Tagovailoa.
Dude, I'll take him in Chicago. How about him there? Oh. I will gladly take him. But before we get to all that, there's another. Well, I guess this summer he was the backup, though he is certainly the starter. Jacoby Brissett went down with a knee sprain. Frank Reich calls it MCL-ish. Like, we're not really sure yet.
MCL adjacent.
Right. So Hoyer the Destroyer played in relief of Brissett. We should mention also that Jacoby Brissett went down in the second quarter of the game. A little friendly fire, Matt. That's some lingo that gets
inside,
tossed around.
Inside industry sort of lingo there.
Yes,
nice.
Yes, yes.
Nice.
And in relief, as I was mentioning earlier, of Brissett, Hoyer completed 17 of 26 passes for 168 yards and 3 touchdowns. Also, just 1 interception and 4 sacks. I will say this much. This is a little tangent I found.
Okay.
So sometimes we talk about sacks as an offensive line issue. Other times we talk about sacks being a quarterback stat. Brian Hoyer had 4 sacks in this game. We know that Quentin Nelson is like the best damn player in the NFL, perhaps. But we know for sure that the Colts O-line is very, very good. And the only time that Jacoby Brissett has had 4 sacks was against Denver 2 weeks ago. Otherwise, he's always been under this number. So I just found it interesting that Hoyer, without even playing a full 4 quarters, had as many sacks as Brissett had at his peak 2 weeks ago against the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, too, that Pittsburgh is a really good pass rushing defense. That's also, but you're right.
DJ Watt was up in there.
Quarterbacks, some people would argue that it's for sure quarterbacks are the actual real decider of the amount of sacks a team lets up and all that. So I think it's interesting. I mean, man, could you imagine if you told a Colts fan Brian Hoyer will be leading you down the field for a potential game-winning drive against an AFC challenger with a pretty equal record to you? If you told them that back in July, they'd be like, I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
No, but then you'd say, oh, wait, my HD is Frank Reich. And what he does is elevate backups because of incredible play calling.
Right. But I mean, I think they would have, their first question would be like, what the hell happened to, Andrew Luck? And oh, by the way, why the hell is it Brian Hoyer that guy's in New England? So just, life comes at you fast.
Indeed. So this game was particularly interesting because there was no T.Y. Hilton. Now there's no Jacoby Brissett. Is there any life for any of these Indianapolis skill players?
Oh, I mean, I think so.
Outside of Marlon Mack.
Yeah, because
obviously we're going to lean on him, right?
Yeah, we like Marlon Mack. He had over 20 carries today against a pretty stout run defense overall, too. So I think that you're still looking at these guys kind of in that committee approach. Like, not for nothing, too. Paris Campbell came back and played pretty well today, too. Had some decent looks in the receiving game, had some looks as a rusher. I expect him to, now that he's healthy and in the mix, I think he'll be part of the mix going forward. I think he'll be a factor. But it's really been Zach Pascal that has been. Yeah. And, I don't know if we ever really, like, I did the whole offseason series on drum beats, and I don't think I ever really picked up on this one. But there was a lot of excitement about Zach Pascal way, way back in, like, mini camps and training camps for a lot of the Colts beat writers. It just had never really come to fruition, at least early in the season. But the last few weeks, he's been kind of one of the top guys there.
Yeah, he led Indianapolis's receiving corps in looks with T.Y. out. He converted 5 of 6 for 76 and a touch. This was his 3rd touchdown in 3 weeks, and he's also cleared 70 yards in 3 of his last 5 games. And here's a fun fact. He is averaging the most fantasy points per target at 2.75, also only 19% owned. So if you're looking with bye weeks and injuries to add to your receiver core, I do think this is a good option. And obviously his chemistry with Hoyer is good enough. And Hilton is going to be out 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, I like that he produced with both of the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good sign.
And he did snag a ball. Really gorgeous. Like, he did, you know, win a 50-50. So it's not just a volume issue here, but it's a skill
He's
plus
made some
volume.
Plays. Yeah.
Jacoby Brissett has been enough of an answer for the Colts, but Mason Rudolph on the other side of this matchup is not the answer.
No.
Unequivocally.
I've seen enough. Sorry. I just don't want to watch Mason Rudolph anymore. Like, maybe he could be good at some point, but the point of the real issue here is that this guy is not giving them starting caliber quarterback play. Especially, he's wildly inconsistent from not just like quarter to quarter, but series to series, sometimes even down to down. He, like, I think his pocket presence sucks. I think he just makes a ton of mistakes under pressure. He just doesn't move the offense. I just think we've seen enough already to say, like, this guy's not the future of the franchise, and he's definitely right now not enough at all. Like, if the Steelers had to go into the offseason right now knowing all that they know about Mason Rudolph right now, I have no idea how they'd possibly feel good about, like, okay, Ben comes back off a serious injury, but at least we got Mason here to count on. I don't think you're feeling good about that. And I don't see how this team could possibly be feeling good about their odds to push for a playoff spot here. Like, they're not making the playoffs, but there's still some hope.
Even if they do, exactly.
You're going to first round exit. No
Fantastic.
Question. And here's the biggest thing that got on my radar today was that Pittsburgh fans, when I tweeted, like, I've seen enough of Mason Rudolph, like, that'll be enough for me. People are like, well, how can you judge him? He doesn't even have the green light to go downfield. It's like, dude, if your team is not giving you the green light to go downfield, that's damning enough. Like, that says it all right there. Like, that's not an excuse in favor of the quarterback. That's a clear sign that the team doesn't believe in you.
That's also a problem with the receivers, because we've talked about Juju not being a number one, and they have a number two working as a number one. Deontay Johnson has flashed in opportunities, but I mean, this is not a star caliber receiver.
Yeah. It's a problematic offense. They are just, it's painfully obvious watching them that they just lack difference makers. And there have been injuries, obviously unforeseen circumstances.
That's why you need a quarterback.
Yeah, you need a quarterback to elevate. And I don't, that's the thing, is like, Rudolph certainly is not at the point in his career. And, you know, he's like five games in, so it is what it is. But, like, he doesn't look like he's a guy that's going to elevate outside of the situation around him. In fact, I think the problem is that he makes this, he often is a reason that the situation looks worse than it is.
And this isn't one of those situations that you can blame on the offensive line, because for so many weeks, I hear us giving quarterbacks passes. Baker Mayfield, name them, Phillip Rivers, like, oh, but their O-line. Oh,
Sam
but their
Darnold.
O-line. Sam Darnold. Oh, but their O-line. According to Football Outsiders, the Pittsburgh Steelers, this is without Mike Munchak, by the way, so I think props, right? Yeah.
They have good players.
The number one ranked pass blocking unit. They've allowed just 7 sacks on the whole damn season, and yet Mason Rudolph has a YP of 6.6. He's a bottom 5 ADOT, just 3 money throws on the season. I mean, come on. When Vance McDonald is your leading receiver, there's a big problem.
The problem also is, too, is like when you're comparing it to quarterbacks like Phillip Rivers, to Sam Darnold, to, you know, you name them. The thing is, Baker Mayfield, perfect example. We have seen games from them in the league where it's like, okay, this guy belongs. Like, even stretches. Darnold had the stretch to end last season. Baker Mayfield broke the damn rookie touchdown record. Like, we've seen these guys play well. Phillip Rivers obviously has a long, long career. But guys like Rosen or Mason Rudolph, like, we've just seen straight nothing from these guys to this point in the NFL. And that's a problem. I mean, it's great that the Steelers were so confident that they could ship off Josh Dobbs, which now looks like, man, it would be kind of nice.
We were talking about that earlier.
I don't think Josh Dobbs is it either.
But it would be nice to evaluate him, because the chasm between even Rudolph and Duck Hodges is so vast that you can't turn to any other options right now. And the trade deadline has passed.
Has come and gone. So I think that's the thing. I wrote about this in a piece a couple of weeks ago. Like, evaluating young quarterbacks is the hardest thing to do in sports, I think. Like, it just especially in football, right? Like, because I don't think you can go from Nathan Peterman bad to, or like, you name it, you know, guys that just straight up can't play. I don't think you can go from like that level to being a great quarterback, but I think you can cycle between like good quarterback and slightly below average, like starter all the time.
It's a balance.
It's just, and it's all about the ecosystem too. Mm-hmm. And I think Rudolph is not in a perfect ecosystem. There are certainly flaws, obviously, but we haven't seen anything to the point that I think he can be in this chasm.
He's not elevating it
either.
He's not helping it thrive. I do want to say, because in fantasy, we like to spin forward, right? Mm-hmm. Week 10, the Steelers have the Rams will be coming off of a bye, theoretically rested. I will say now, both you and I were down on Deontay Johnson in week 9. Brad Evans and the rest of our FFL crew seemed a bit higher on him. I do think I'm not off of him completely. It is problematic that Mason Rudolph isn't chucking the ball, and he would, you know, probably be one of those outside deeper threats.
Yeah. Like, but he might be good. I think Deontay Johnson might be good.
He might be good.
Yeah.
And he is limited by his quarterback, though we've seen him flash, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the Rams secondary, I do think matchup-wise, it would not surprise me if Deontay Johnson had like a 4-catch, 60-yard, 1-touchdown outing in Week 10 versus the Rams. So look at your options heading into Week 10. And if you have a bunch of players on a bye or you're going to need someone, maybe, and you own Deontay Johnson, don't drop him just yet. Maybe flex him if you need to for next week if you're looking ahead.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. But Liz, speaking of quarterbacks who aren't the answer. Hey, speaking of quarterbacks who aren't the answer, and also speaking of quarterbacks who fluctuate, because I think Carson Wentz is one of these quarterbacks right now who fluctuates.
Don't even put them in the same conversation.
No, I'm not. I'm saying Trubisky's in this bottom group where, with guys like Mason Rudolph, where it's like, we just haven't seen anything other than what, that damn Tampa Bay game that people are still excited about?
No, you know, the last touchdown. Week of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. He had a quarter.
Yeah.
Where he was good.
That's it. He had a half of a quarter.
But, like, we haven't seen a stretch where Trubisky, like, okay, he's got it. Like, obviously Carson Wentz has got it. He's all the way between this. He's fluctuated a little bit with his situation as it's come and gone, which is pretty familiar. Also worth noting that Carson Wentz was a guy that after his rookie year, people were like, does he have mechanics issues? But it's like, the thing is, he got better off of those. The quarterback on the other side of the field today is a guy who has never gotten better from that.
10 completions. 10 completions. That's it.
At the half, they had a yard, a net passing yard, 1 yard.
I don't know what to do.
Well,
there is nothing. The frustrating part is that, and we talked a little bit about this on one of our halftime shows, Ryan Pace made a mistake.
Yep.
He picked wrong. His picker was off. There is no denying it. We could have had Patrick Mahomes. We could have had Deshaun Watson. We traded up for a guy that the front office was stoked about, despite the fact that John Fox was like off, isolated somewhere, like quarantined from the entire damn process.
I'm good. I've got Mike Glennon.
Right. But this was a guy who wasn't a starter for more than a year. Also, side note, who also wasn't a starter but a damn year, Dwayne Haskins. How's that working out? Not great. It's the answer. So Mitch Trubisky, I think, we're stuck with him. As we mentioned, the trade deadline has come and gone. Ryan Pace is not going to own his answers because the NFL refuses to establish some sort of transparency. And so this is it. And my worry, which you highlighted in this halftime show, is that the defense is going to start to give up. They're going to get angry. Like, this is when things start to turn. We saw it with Blake Bortles last year. We saw it with this was the example you gave with
Mark Sanchez
and the Jets. And I just don't see how this is good for the franchise, especially when you have so many young pieces with great upside and you have a coach who is so inside his own damn head trying to fix everything that he cannot see the forest through the trees.
I think it's unfortunate because I like a lot of the pieces in Chicago. Hey, in 2018, I was a lifelong Bears fan. Like, this is a team that has a lot to get excited about from a defensive perspective. They have skill position talent too. Like, this is, it's been a little annoying at different parts of the year. I feel like people have started to kind of say, well, the Bears don't really have that much from a skill position perspective. That's a little bit bullshit. I think they have more than enough.
No,
to make
target it. Anthony Miller in the red zone, and I guarantee he's going to convert for you.
Taylor Gabriel can make plays. Allen Robinson was on pace heading into this game when he had like what, a catch for 6 yards. Mm-hmm. He was on pace for 105 catches and 1200 yards and 6 touchdowns despite playing with this dust ball as a quarterback. Like, that's elevating beyond your situation. So they have more than enough from a skill position perspective.
And David Montgomery is good.
Tariq Cohen, I don't really know what has happened to Tariq Cohen in this offense. Like, frankly, he scored today, but like, he just doesn't have the same role. Frankly, I think this whole situation, Matt Nagy has been on tilt since that missed kick in the playoffs. They made their entire offseason
about working out kickers.
About a kick, like a kicker battle. And like you could tell it was like, oh, this team is in its own head about its kicker thing that went wrong in the playoffs.
Living in the
and
past.
Like, oh, by the way, you're like not being able to see the forest through the trees. They were more like trying to run away from a forest fire right into a hailstorm. And the hailstorm is that they stuck with Mitch Trubisky as their quarterback and he can't play. And if he starts another game for this franchise, I agree with you. Like now you're looking at that potential Mark Sanchez situation where how can the defense, you know, show up? It's like personal pride. Give me a break. These guys have their
incentives,
bodies on the line.
Right.
Like, but I mean, like, they're not going to quit, but that frustration, it has to seep in when you're going out there and giving your best. And this quarterback has just regressed so beyond like the pale. And I think it seeps into the point where I think this is a lost of well beyond lost season for the Bears. And now they just have to, they don't have a first round pick.
No.
I don't know. Like you're looking at an Andy Dalton, Ryan Tannehill year next year. And like, honestly, wouldn't you kind of kill for Andy Dalton right now on this team?
Andy Dalton and Allen Robinson could do something.
They could do some things.
Yeah.
And
I'm here for it.
I just have to wonder what's the health of the franchise. Like who survives this mistake? Cause like this is the type of mistake when the quarterback puts you in this spot, ramifications go beyond just what happens this year. Like now we have to wonder, is Nagy back next year? I think it'd be quick to pull the plug on him, especially because
I don't think you can pull the plug on him considering what he did last year.
I agree.
And also like the mistake belongs to Ryan Pace.
Right. But is Pace back?
The McCaskey family has to answer that question.
Are you going to look at like a GM with a coach that he has to sign off? Because that's when organizations start to get into some trouble. And I mean, the Bears are already, they're already at this point. Like that's the thing about Nagy is that like Trubisky's not his guy. He's had to, from the moment he probably interviewed for this job, to say like, I can fix him. Yep. I can make this guy good. And there were flashes, but like, it's just time to move on. And from a fantasy angle, what the hell do you do? Cause like, this was the spot to use Anthony Miller. This was the spot to roll out Allen Robinson at DFS.
I think that was a little short-sighted. You're saying that this was the spot because the Eagles secondary has been
right.
So beatable, but Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills did come back last mm-hmm. week, and that secondary was better with their starters. It wasn't nearly
right.
as toast-filled. So I do think that was short-sighted analysis. We mentioned it on FFL
we did, yeah.
to expect a little bit of an upgrade. And now I also think from a fantasy angle, when you see Philadelphia, you just can't assume the worst every time.
It's like the season is often chapters of smaller seasons. Sure. And there was a October where we just ripped through the, you know, mm-hmm. the Eagles. It was like, Stephon Diggs needs to get right. Here's the Eagles secondary. Like, whatever you got, go watch
it. It has changed.
Things have changed. But it's just going to, like, you know it's going to sit with people. Like, this was the week for Allen Robinson to go crazy. And he had a catch for 6 yards. Like, now you know that is, even if this matchup wasn't as juicy as we thought, now we always know that is within the range of possible outcomes. Like, a catch for 6 yards.
On the other side, David Montgomery scored twice against a vaunted Eagles run defense.
Yeah. So this, you know, this stuff is like really predictable, and I don't know how we don't get everything right all the time.
Although I guess we should also mention, here was the moment for me that Matt Nagy got onto the, like, I've been defending Matt Nagy, but he got real on the radar.
Oh, yeah. I think you and I both at the same moment.
We're watching the games together. It was who fell down right near the goal line?
Tariq Cohen had
it was before. There was a receiver.
Oh, Taylor Gabriel.
Taylor Gabriel fell down at like the 2 yard line, something like that. So they were clearly going to call a running play. And I was like, oh, here's Montgomery's moment. No. Matt Nagy throws in Tariq Cohen on a running play, not some sort of gadgety, you know, a quick pass to the outside nonsense. They thought that Tariq Cohen from 2 yards out could clear the pile. And then it didn't happen. Got stuffed.
No kidding.
Against Philadelphia's run defense, and
stunning.
Then David Montgomery on the next play got the opportunity. So hopefully, you know, it would be nice to imagine that David Montgomery is going to continue to get those goal line looks. He is going to continue to get fed, even when the game script isn't necessarily positive, because the quarterback cannot be trusted. So at least for any of those Montgomery owners, you know that volume should be on your side. For at least the near future.
Yeah. Risky bet, though. I mean, he had 3 catches for 36 yards, which was nice, but on the ground, 14 for 40.
Oh, he averaged under 3 yards per carry.
Yeah, they trailed throughout. So But you came away with those touchdowns. Like, at least there's that.
At least there's that.
You know, I've like run out of good points when it's like, at least there's that.
DeSean Jackson came in from the abdominal injury for one catch, and then he was like, nah, man.
He did the Abe Simpson gif, you know, when he like walks in the door and comes back out.
The silver lining here, if there is one, the Eagles are on bye in week 10, but in week 11, they got the Patriots. So something has to be figured out. They managed to pull off a win 2 weeks in a row. That's great for them. And Jordan Howard, he did some stuff in a revenge theory-ish game.
Yeah.
And Zach Ertz did some stuff. So maybe when you made the point about this Philadelphia Eagles offense needing to get more creative, some of that is turning around. And they do have a week to maybe get DeSean Jackson healthy or know that he can't be relied upon and so then actually have a plan B.
Yeah, I think that seeing Jackson go out and then having the offense continue to be about the tight ends and the running game. Because Carson Wentz, I mean, he threw 39 passes, but only averaged 6 yards per attempt. He took 4 sacks. This pass protection's really not been as good as we want it to be, but they can still run the ball really well. I mean, Jordan Howard, like you said, 19 for 82 and a touch. Miles Sanders, 10 for 42, and then chipped in 3 for 31 as a receiver. Mm-hmm. And that has been – Sanders has been pretty – like, he doesn't have a great role in the passing game, but he's been effective when they've – targeted him.
It's also been something. That is where his floor is coming from.
Yeah, it's not like it's not a great floor, but it's something. And I mean, and then of course the leading receiver is Zach Ertz. Second leading receiver on the team is Dallas Goedert. Like 109 yards. I mean, it's 103 yards to 39 yards, so it's a wide gap, but still nevertheless, like that was all that was working. Alshon Jeffrey had 3 killer drops today. Especially the last one looked like it could be be able to capitalize on that. It didn't happen, of course, because they have a dust ball at quarterback. But like, nevertheless, it was a situation where this wide receiver core again showed it cannot be relied on. And I mean, Nelson Aguilar, after Alshon Jeffrey, is the second leading wide receiver on the team for 3 for 21. And then you've got no other wide receivers catch to pass besides DeSean Jackson.
For five yards.
So I think the Eagles can still, especially going into a bye week, that's
this
nice.
Is it. This is it. This is the gift for them.
Yeah, find that identity through these new pieces, these younger guys like Sanders and Goddard, who counterpart really good veterans in Jordan Howard and Zach Ertz.
Yes. So let's talk about, we talked about the Eagles' backfield. Let's talk about Kansas City's backfield, because I feel like since August, it's put us on tilt. Like, we have been waffling back and forth because, frankly, Andy Reid has waffled a bit, or at least he's not showing his hand. I don't want to say he's waffling, perhaps. But heading into Week 9, LeSean McCoy was averaging about 11 opportunities per game, snap rate of 38%. Damian Williams, about 11 opportunities per game, snap rate of 35%. Daryl Williams, 24%, a little more than 4 opportunities per game. It looked for a minute like LeSean McCoy was the answer, and then he fumbled last week. And after he fumbled, then Damian Williams became the answer. But then in this week, it looks like Damian Williams is the guy. I don't even want to say anything declarative.
Yeah. No, I don't think you can say anything declarative. So keep that in mind. But I think Damian Williams does, also, by the way, I think it was Therese Paylor, our colleague, tweeted out like that, you know, the Chiefs really are still, they're definitely still searching for answers in the backfield. And they still really like rookie Darwin Thompson a lot. And I wanted to reply and be like, Therese, don't you dare.
Don't add another.
No. Don't bring up Darwin Thompson to me, because that was there was a portion where it's like,
that was your face melting.
Yeah. Because I was like, I can't leave a fantasy draft without Darwin Thompson. Think about that ceiling. Then they signed LeSean McCoy and my face melted off. Anyways, but back to the current state of things.
And the ceiling is with Damian Williams.
It does, because it appears that he has the best role on the team. He has not played a full season, obviously, but he still has run more routes than any running back on this team. So he's been a clear factor in the passing game. And, I mean, he obviously had a big run today, but he's still
91 yards.
I mean, these chuckleheads behind him, like, McCoy's just not getting it done. Like, I know he has the fumbling issue, but also, like, he's had a couple of pop runs, like, his first few games that he played there, but I don't think he looks good anymore.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago where we were a little bit stunned, but had come to the conclusion that Shady was now the early downs grinder?
The early down grinder,
right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where we're at. And maybe Williams wasn't all the way healthy. He had that soft tissue issue.
Yeah.
And so they're waiting for that to fully heal up. And now that he's healthy, I guess if I have to mess, and obviously having Matt Moore under center despite the win caps the ceiling on a lot of these players altogether, right? When Patrick Mahomes is back in week 10, as it is expected, some of this will change. But if I have to throw a dart at one of these running backs, and I'm not one, like, I don't want to mess with these guys in DFS. I don't want to do it if I don't have to. But if I do have to, I think Williams is going to be the answer.
And it could very well be that, like, I think your point about him now being healthy is really important, because it could very well be that he just wasn't healthy, and that's why he wasn't getting the work coming off that injury. And that's why it looked like a muddied committee where, like, Darrell Williams is getting burned and McCoy is getting those early down looks, and Damian Williams is pretty much only – there was one game, I can't remember what it was, but he was out there for 18 plays, 17 of which were pass plays, like, that he wasn't getting any rushing work at all. So that could very well be the answer. And then you're looking at a situation where – and this is why taking the victory lap – on a player that is bad is always dangerous, because you can be, my buddy Sigmund Bloom likes to say it, you can be right and wrong about a player in one season. And, like, if you faded Damian Williams and you were peacocking out there on the Twitter streets, you looking good those first 8 weeks of the season. But, like, what if there's a very real scenario where from weeks 10 to 16, Damian Williams, like, he could be not the guy that he was to end 2018, but could very well be a lead back in a Patrick Mahomes led offense, and, like, hey, look, that's gonna win you some fantasy games.
Any thoughts on Adam Thielen re-injuring his hamstring? We were talking about a player not getting fully healthy and how that affected his production in Damian Williams. And so Adam Thielen comes out, missed last week, had this again. It's a soft tissue issue, re-injures it immediately, and now we're talking about BC Johnson and
Laquon Treadwell and 3 for 58.
Yeah,
I mean, gross.
I think there was a window to sell high on Thielen, and if you didn't do it, I think you're just stuck here.
Yeah. The tough part is, you know, these guys, Thielen and Diggs, have great individual ceilings because they're great players.
But working in concert together has always been.
Well, it's been tough this year because they want to run the ball, and they're running it. I mean, they're running it very effectively. I mean, 3.4 yards per carry today for Dalvin Cook, but still 21 rushes. That's what they want to do. So I don't know. Today just looked like Kirk Cousins wasn't playing in peak form. There was a couple plays, you know, going into this week, from the month of October, even, like, the most efficient passer in the league, statistically, like, the best quarterback in the NFL. But you know that there are just plays that Kirk Cousins can't make.
And, like, people are watching.
So,
because this game was at Arrowhead.
Exactly.
If people are watching, can't count on Kirk.
Unless it's Thursday night football against Washington. But was anyone really watching that?
Nobody's
game?
Watching. It's against Washington. Come on. That's a revenge game anyway.
Are you kidding? Yeah, that's the revenge narrative outweighed the watching narrative, the primetime narrative. The narrative, when narrative just collide, man, it could be tough.
Then the Vikings are at Dallas, as a heads up, next week.
People are watching that.
That one is people might be, the folks are watching.
I mean, do they play on Thanksgiving? Because, like, that's when the narrative will really be written.
I don't know the Thanksgiving schedule right now, Matt. I just got really
excited thinking about
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Oh, that food's trash.
I mean, but it's a fun holiday,
I guess.
I actually was looking at it this morning. We got Chicago at Detroit. We have Buffalo at Dallas, and then New Orleans and Atlanta.
That'll be interesting.
I forgot who's home for that.
Atlanta's
last one.
Horrible, but They're that might Atlanta. Be a nice fireworks opportunity for.
It's in Atlanta. Let me tell you what.
Hey, I hear Matt Ryan's no good on grass.
Well, but it's in Atlanta, so that's all that matters.
I
know.
I hear Drew Brees ain't good out of a dome.
But at least he's in this new dome.
Another dome that is sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, by the way.
Right. Beautiful. Corporate sponsorships.
Thank you, Mercedes-Benz, for gifting all of us a new car today.
I was in a Mercedes-Benz on Friday night.
Go on.
I was not driving. And obviously. I was trying to find the lights to look something up, and I accidentally pressed the 911 button.
There's a 911 button in the car?
Yes,
Mercedes-Benz
cares
about safety.
I don't know
safety.
Anything that fancy. It's like,
what?
The, it's
Why
like
do you the, need that?
I don't know. Well, maybe, I don't know, because if you're rich enough to afford a Mercedes-Benz, then, like, you probably want to keep yourself safe.
Does it go to the special rich person's number, 912?
It went somewhere. And then my friend was like, what are you doing? This was not her car. This whole thing sounds very shady now.
Oh, boy.
But this was not her car. And so anyway, they called and they were like, no, it was not a rental car. It was another person.
You stole a car.
I mean, borrowed?
Advanced borrowing.
Yeah. Anyway, let me tell you, if you have a Mercedes-Benz and
you got that 911 button,
they are on it. They are like, yes, can we help you? And I was like, no.
I mean,
don't.
Don't, especially since we're driving in a maybe stolen car.
It hurts society to have a rich person lost, right? So we gotta make sure the rich people are protected.
I think
at
what
all
you
costs.
Really wanted to say, Liz, is that if you're rich enough to afford a Mercedes-Benz, you definitely like to call the cops. So people are too loud, you know, all that sort of thing.
I was the loud one in the car. It was a fun night.
I'm aware. I've been out with you before, Liz. I'm also familiar with the experience.
Okay. I also took a Tesla, like a Lux Lyft this weekend.
Oh.
And I took the new Tesla, which is basically like sitting in a bullet. That thing goes crazy fast. Also, the driver was like watching the TV screen the whole time. And I was
like, that makes me nervous.
Right there.
You know who was going crazy fast like a new car today?
Adrian Peterson.
That's right.
Ain't showing any of tread on those tires.
You had Devin Singletary in this game as a rookie. Like,
well, his nickname is Motor. Is that where you're wanting to go?
Yeah, you really had. I mean,
listen, I was picking up on Brett's cues. That's kind of what you do. You don't try to just like bogart your own agenda in. You like play this back and forth. It's kind of a give and a take. So we're going to talk about Adrian Peterson now and how he is the most reliable. Look at me. How he is the most reliable running back, because despite game flow, like we were talking about with David Montgomery, Bill Callahan wants to turn back the clock to 1999. You cannot look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Not with your glasses off. Look at me. And feed Adrian Peterson, because Dwayne Haskins ain't it either.
Ain't it.
Isn't that interesting, though? You've got Mitch Trubisky and David Montgomery, and Matt Nagy's like, okay, fine. And then I wonder if Bill Callahan was like watching Chicago and he was like, you know what? We're just going to save ourselves a bunch of weeks. I'm the interim guy. Just give it to AP.
Yeah, no, this is not like I'm convinced now. I am quite convinced now that this is not a game plan situation. This is not like an offensive philosophy thing. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he wants to run the ball because he's an offensive line coach, whatever. He's a running game guy, sure. But Bill Callahan, he's just trying to run the clock out on the season. Every Sunday, Washington finishes as the first game so fast. They don't just run the hell out of the ball. They run the hell out of the clock, which honestly, thank you, because you suck. We don't want to watch you anymore. The best thing you can do is just run the clock out in the season. Get these games over. Like today.
Let Adrian Peterson
just
break the record.
Milk the clock from the beginning.
Googled Washington Redskins games length, and the top hit is 49ers win over Redskins in shortest NFL game in 10 years.
Yes.
There it is.
Yes. And today they were the first game wrapped up between them and Buffalo. They were done. They were done so fast. Like, this is what they
were. So fast.
Even the Thursday night game against Minnesota, and like when they meet a team like Minnesota that wants to run the shit out of the ball too, oh man, that game, that's going to fly right by, because I'm sitting here on Thursday night. I'm like, I didn't have to be anywhere until 9:15. I was early. I mean,
Dan Snyder's a rich guy, probably drives a Mercedes. He's money. He's eco-conscious.
He's got one of those Lincoln
oh, weird
SUV situation.
Like, I don't drive myself anymore.
Yeah, he's got a driver.
His time is money. Calling a timeout is wasting money.
Adrian Peterson was the RB18 on the week thus far. He is going to get you RB3 production every single week. Another 100-yard effort. He's been... this is it. This is the volume play. So if you held on to him, I know it's not sexy. I know he's not attached. He breaks all of the rules that we normally preach about being attached to a high-octane offense. But unlike Mark Walton in Miami... sure, this offense stinks, but also he is getting the goal line, which is the difference between him and, say, Devin Singletary or Mark Walton.
Mm-hmm. And the good news is, even like you said, it doesn't feel great to start Adrian Peterson. The game's going to be over so quickly, it won't feel that bad. It'll be over before you know it.
So did you want to talk about Devin Singletary and how he looks good, but he's still probably not going to get most of the goal line work?
Yeah, I don't know.
He did score this week. So.
He scored. He had a great day as a receiver. Mm-hmm. Over 40 yards, and I thought he really proved to be a sustaining force for the running game too. Over 20 carries, 4.8 yards per carry, but his longest run was 17 yards. So I think that's a nice, like, okay, there's no big run pumping up that YPC average. I think overall, like, Buffalo is a defense first run oriented team, but they've never had a feature back. And I don't know if Devin Singletary is a feature back, but I think he's the best shot we have to get one in this really good situation for a team like that. And, you know, Singletary's kind of had like a weird rookie year, right? Because he comes out week one, plays all these snaps, but gets just four carries.
And was hurt.
And then got hurt in week two.
Yeah.
After he was starting to play well against the Giants. Then he comes back, and I think, again, like Damien Williams eased into the action mm-hmm. a little bit. But this looked like, I think we could easily look back at week nine of the 2019 season as the moment where Frank Gore passes the torch to Devin Singletary the rest of the year.
There's only some trepidation about perhaps re-injuring, right? Because we see a lot of these running backs have 15 carries, say, limits, because the fear, like James Conner, if you overload them, they won't be able to stay on the field. And since Singletary has already given us that, or maybe the coaching staff, that impression,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you keep Gore available longer. Oh, and yeah, also, I mean, you like leave Gore's legs fresh for like scoring opportunities. Yeah, that makes sense.
Gore's not like gonna go away. No. Like, he didn't go away today, but they're like, in an ideal situation, they want to run the ball enough where I think Gore can get 10 to 12 touches yep. and Singletary can still get 18-ish or something yep. like that. And that's enough to still make Singletary a really good play in fantasy. And it's just, we watched a lot of bad quarterbacks today. There were still some times where it was like, man, oh, bad backup quarterback there. Oh, wait, no, that was actually Josh Allen. Like, he still makes enough plays that, like, they can't put the offense on him, so they have to run the ball.
Nice schedule upcoming, too, at Cleveland and then at Miami. So if you lost faith last week in Singletary and you benched him, don't do it again next week, because I think he will continue to produce. And I believe Matt is saying the same thing.
I am saying the same thing.
All right, where do you want to go next, friend? Do you want to talk about your boy Tyler Lockett? No.
I'm going to turn it. Can we turn that game on?
Nope. This is, you do your job and then you get the reward like a puppy, like Charlie. You do the same thing to Charlie. You go poo-poo, you get a treat. So let's talk about Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett rocks. Seahawks offense, like, this was the classic Russell Wilson bails them out at the end. He's the savior. And, oh, by the way, like, Tyler Lockett's good. No doubt about it.
DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf is good. And, like,
that sideline catch in overtime, we both gasped at the same time yeah. when he reeled it in right to his belly.
Lockett, heading into Sunday Night Football, is the number one wide receiver on the week nine slate. Mike Evans, same game, number two. And the number three is DK Metcalf with six catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. And, like, DK Metcalf, I still had people tweeting me today that he's actually not good, or, you know, whatever, like, which is unbelievable that you want to die on that hill in this one, like, his best NFL game. I don't know that Metcalf would have been good anywhere he went, but, like, because I think he does have a very narrow, like, a great skill set, but a very narrow skill set. There are only certain things that he can do, and he's with the perfect quarterback to do that. But, like, I just feel really lucky that we ended up getting him with a team that sees, like, okay, Metcalf can run these three routes, and he's going to get better every week. Like, he is
improving.
He is improving every single week, and he's already shown you that he's a baseline quality starting receiver. And now if he grows even more, that I said this during the draft season, I stand by it. I still think the peak of his range of outcomes is Dez Bryant. And he's making plays that are Dez-ish. Like, again, that's his highest range. I'm not saying he is going to be Dez Bryant. He's certainly not already, but he's showing the ability that, like, when they need him to be a big factor, he can be a big factor. And now they're adding Josh Gordon to the mix. Like, this is a fun set of skill position players for Russell Wilson here with Lockett. I mean, like, a three wide receiver set of DK Metcalf based on what he's shown so far on one side as, like, a flanker, whatever. Josh Gordon as the X or the flanker, and then Lockett inside.
In the middle, doing all that dirty work.
Damn, that's nice.
A lot of people, I'm glad you mentioned the Josh Gordon news, wanted, you know, the take. What does this mean? This hurts Metcalf. This hurts David Moore. First of all, David Moore, don't, whatever.
That doesn't exist. It's not a thing. Jerron Brown, remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
You had some good talking points that we'll always remember you fondly.
Also, this was my boy. The tight end went out, and so they needed another big body.
Meat Mountain from Montana,
the big
Will Dissly.
From Big Sky, Will Dissly.
Meat Mountain from Montana.
Meat Mountain. Rather than this hurting any single receiver, I think this boosts Russell Wilson's
yep.
value.
Yep.
And I will stand by that. I think this just becomes a more potent offense. I don't think this really cuts into anyone's massive volume. Maybe there's a little bit, but like a fewer balls to go around. I think that you still have Tyler Lockett as your number one and DK Metcalf as your number two. And then maybe some gets left over for Gordon.
Yeah, I think so.
Interestingly. So wait, where would you put Gordon, like, heading in? Let's say he's going to play next week. The Seahawks have a division game, I believe, at San Francisco next week.
Yeah.
Well, Emmanuel Mosley ain't great. He isn't a whole lot, right? Like, that's a beatable matchup.
And it's Russ. He can thrive in a lot of different situations.
And we saw what Kyler did on Thursday night against the 49ers, right? That was like an upside down game.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you placing Josh Gordon ROS in terms of production? And I'm not asking for a fearless forecast, but a wide receiver three,
He is in this grand collection of the Zach Pascal, Preston Williams.
30 to 40.
Yep, 30 to 40 guys that could have big weeks, could not, very volatile, but likely aren't going to make the difference in your fantasy
season. Matchup dependent.
Yes.
With you 100%. Just wanted to clarify all of that in case we had questions
about it.
For the people. At San Francisco, this is going to be a tough game. And also, the other thing, Tampa Bay, who played the Seahawks in week 9, face Arizona in week 11.
Very nice.
I like the idea of Tampa Bay and Arizona. I like it for Arizona as a get right spot.
Feels like one of those offenses, or one of those games where the offenses could either go completely wild or throw up all over each other and the under hits big.
Tampa Bay's run defense is quite good.
Mm-hmm. Arizona runs the ball really well, as we
saw
with Kenyon Drake.
That means that there's more time for Cliff Kingsbury to prepare because he's had a 10-day layover since he played on Thursday night. So he should probably game plan against the pass defense.
Figure out the best way to ice his own defense.
Yeah.
You didn't watch that game on Thursday night.
It was Halloween, guys. I was too busy trolling kids dressed as Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, you have children. I don't. So yeah. I didn't do any Halloween fun things. I watched a football game.
So after coming out of the bye, the Raiders were looking like they might play spoiler, and then they dropped two. But against the Lions, they won, and Derek Carr was a fantasy damage pick. He was a chalk sleeper, I'll admit it, across the board this week. Josh Jacobs continues to be awesome. And the Raiders are doing things, but when I look at this matchup, I don't see anything that I haven't already assumed about these two teams, whether it's muddiness in Detroit's backfield or the fact that Darren Waller is a damn stud.
Yeah, I think it's just real credit to the Raiders and credit to John Gruden. This team is pretty good. Offensively, I think they do some really cool, creative things. I was saying this when I was charting Amari Cooper for reception perception. John Gruden was doing a lot with moving him around that no other coaching staff had done previously in Oakland. And it didn't work out production-wise, but it obviously did when he went to Dallas and they followed a very similar blueprint. So I give credit to John Gruden. Both these quarterbacks over 9 yards per attempt in this game. And I think one of the differences in it was Oakland, I mean, they can establish the run because talk about a damn stud. Josh Jacobs is a damn stud. And remember when people were worried about, and this is a legitimate worry because it's just part of data scouting. Wasn't a starter, never carried a full workload. 28 carries, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns. By the way, he was 12th in yards from scrimmage coming into this game, 13th among running backs in touches. Guy's a complete workhorse. And by the way, though, the haters who were upset about Danny Amendola today, 3 for 29.
Mm.
While Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay ate big.
We should also note that Mike Daniels, for the Lions, was out again this week. So there was some talk as to whether or not he would play. So I do think that helped Josh Jacobs. I'm with you that he's a stud. And when I say that Darren Waller is a stud too, his stat line may not have. If you watched the game, you saw him reeling with a 30-yard catch.
Yeah,
and it was gorgeous.
Yep, 2 for 52.
So not in terms of fantasy massive production, but IRL, a joy to watch.
Yeah, Darius Slay was back in this game, too, for the Lions. And Tyrell Williams, he'd been living off touchdowns. He'd scored in every game. And, I made him my pick of a player I liked this week. And you're living with that volatility and that variance because he goes 3 for 48 and no touchdowns and looks like a bit of a mistake in your lineup. Also, it's worth noting, Darren Waller's great. They kind of have something in Foster Moreau, too. Rookie tight end who scored a touchdown in this game. He's popped up every now and again in the season, too.
Well, he, I think, is more of a prototypical receiving tight end, whereas Waller has just been
a wide receiver.
A wide receiver, right? So he's playing a different role. Hunter Renfrow scored 2 weeks in a row. How dirty does that make you feel?
I liked Hunter Renfrow coming into the year.
You did not.
I liked him as a prospect coming into the draft, but people got hyped about, I mean, people.
Wait.
People got hyped.
Wait, I liked him not over Hard Knocks. You know when I decided to like him. What is the game that I make all my take locks?
Oh, the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
Lock that take in the Senior Bowl.
He had a great outing at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. No, I mean, you locked that take in then. You're not a sheep that likes him from Hard Knocks. You're not one of these, like, every fantasy writer who's like, oh, there's a player who looks just like me in the NFL. It's
well,
Hunter
none of
Renfro.
Them look just like me. So
no, can that, confirm.
That's not true. You want to do some quick hits?
Sure.
All right, one sentence each. Green Bay Chargers.
What the hell? Packers, what the hell?
Ken Whisenhunt, how's that man cave coming?
Oh, you hate to see it.
Zing. Two touchdowns for Melvin Gordon. I like that. Cleveland at Denver.
Goodbye, Browns.
OBJ is already whining.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, though. Like,
maybe it was his cleats.
Maybe it was the cleats.
Maybe he needs some new shoes. Lord knows he's given all his shoes away.
Yeah.
Maybe stop giving away your shoes.
Sure.
Houston, Jacksonville.
Thoughts if Foles comes back after the bye? Well, I think it changes. I think they should stick with Gardner Minshew, but I think that they'll probably lock themselves into the take that this game means more than all the other games previous, and then they'll probably go back to Foles.
Which would do, I think we both agree, shave the ceiling. I think you can
off
disagree
DJ Chark?
Off DJ Chark
yep,
a little bit.
I think so too.
Jets at Miami. How the heck are the Dolphins going to tank for Tua now?
And the Jets are just, they're so bad that we talked about this on the Thursday pod with Scott. They have the easiest remaining strength of schedule, according to Sharp Football Stats. But I think they are too bad to take advantage of it. Like, Le'Veon Bell, would you say he was the RB10?
He's the RB10 on the week, over 100 scrimmage yards. Like, what's wrong with Le'Veon Bell?
Took
RB10,
25 touches to get there. Took 25 touches to get 121 scoreless yards. Robbie Anderson is dust. Chris Herndon, who even knows? like, maybe that guy will play in 2035.
But your boy, Demaryius Thomas.
Demaryius Thomas, he's out there playing snaps in 11 personnel, let me tell you what.
You tell me what.
And Jameson Crowder, of course, gets his 8 catches for, like, 80 meaningless yards.
Oh, my eyes are bleeding.
So, Gase is 1-and-done. This offense sucks. We'll see in 2020.
Le'Veon Bell's still going to produce. I mean, this is what's going to happen. He is now going to get fed because Greg Williams is going to say,
play.
Enough of you. Let my defense, what's left of it, handle something.
Those guys are going to kill each other before the season ends.
It's going to be great. Tennessee at Carolina.
I got nothing here.
When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. Ryan Tannehill ain't it. Arizona at San Francisco.
The Cardinals have one of the best rushing situations in the entire NFL. Cliff Kingsbury's scheme has shown us that it can produce quality running backs. I think they run block pretty well. And, like, not only that, they spread the field. We know they play a ton of, like, 4 wide receiver sets. It's great when you get block. You want to get blockers out of the box for your running back. Spread the field with a bunch of wide receivers, you chuckleheads. And, oh, by the way, they have a mobile quarterback, which also helps running backs too. So, in the end, Kenyon Drake, I don't think he's going to be
putting up 100 yards at Tampa Bay next week.
No, of course not. But it just goes to show you that, like, hey, if a running back is playing for Arizona, you should probably pay attention because, like, we've seen, like, Kenyon Drake just did his best Chase Edmonds impression.
I also thought there was some debate as to whether or not Zach Zenner might see a little bit of run near the goal line. All of those, the talk heading in to the game, according to the beat writers, was that there was going to be a lot of Kenyon Drake. And at least we know the volume will be on his side.
Yeah.
All right. We will be back on Friday. Y'all follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza _FF, and that is at Matt Harmon _BYB. I believe we are out.
We are out.